Welcome to Live Well, Be Well, a show to help high performers improve their health and well-being. This is an excerpt from my conversation from Blue Zone pioneer Dan Buettner. The link to the full episode is in the description.
When I first started writing about Blue Zones in 2005, nobody was paying attention to the importance of social connectiveness. And people just sort of rolled their eyes like, you know, what? Because we're never marketed. Nobody can make money off of you being connected to your neighbor, Sarah, or your people being connected in general. So it doesn't occur to us. But we know that if you have three friends who you can count on a bad day, it's worth 8 years of life expectancy over being lonely or feeling lonely. There's no pharmaceutical in the world that can give you 8 years of life expectancy like social connectivity. Now, we can be proactive, and I think a big Blue Zone strategy, and this is a bit of a lift at our age, is searching out people whose idea of recreation is, you know, biking or golfing or playing pickleball, people who care about you on a bad day, but also it's not a bad idea to have a vegan or vegetarian in your immediate social network, because people's health behaviors are as contagious as catching a cold. So that would be the first strategy, probably the best thing you could do to add years of life expectancy, because friends are long-term adventures. You know, when you think about your best friend, you probably had them for decades, and they exert a measurable influence on what you eat and what you do and what you think and how you feel and whether or not you do drugs or drink too much. So that's super important. But apart from that, even the sort of low-grade social interactions, there was a great study done out of the University of Quebec that found that even the number of times you interact with your barista or your postman or your neighbor is more predictive of how long you're going to live than whether or not you say you are on a diet or get exercise. So this latter, or even both categories, is really much a function of where you live. If you live in an American suburb where you have an attached garage and you go out and get in your car, drive to work and park in your underground garage and go up to your office, you're not going to connect with humans very much. Whereas if you walk outside and immediately you're confronted with neighbors and there's a coffee shop nearby that are full of people. And we don't realize that our city planners, at least more so in America than say London, where you have this beautiful infrastructure that evolved from really a pedestrian way of life. Most American cities were constructed for cars. And I know, by the way, London is going the wrong direction when it comes to the number of cars and, you know, the traffic congestion. But the best thing cities can do is adopt what's called complete streets. So every new street has to be designed for sidewalks, bike lanes, and public transportation, and trees. But then the best thing you can do if you live in a place that's not walkable is move to a walkable neighborhood, because you will unconsciously connect socially, and therein lies the power.
It's such a big thing though, isn't it? Because even if you're not living in suburbs and you're living in a city, when I lived, I mean, I live in London now, so I still live in a capital city, but when I lived in New York, it's when I really felt that loneliness. And actually that's when my health really, really went bad.
Interesting.
Really badly. And I think I was surrounded. I was in a job that was modeling and I was surrounded by people every day, but I didn't connect to those people. You know, I was used as this asset, as this character, but I never saw the same people ever. And it's like, it was so odd because it was about 15 years ago. And I didn't even know there was a term called loneliness back then. I mean, we speak about it a lot more, but you know, since then we just know how bad it is. And it's even been like chronic loneliness has been connected to having 15 cigarettes a day as bad for your health. And when you hear that stat, you're like, wow, that's actually a huge thing that we're dampening our health by just not connecting and seeing people or even being seen and connected. It's such a huge thing. And one thing that I did was set up an organization, a not-for-profit, to create a community. And I know a lot of things that you speak about is volunteering and it's about giving back. And that's a really beautiful way. So if I just don't want someone who's listening to this going, oh, I don't have those three friends. What do I do? There's one of those things where you can actually, what you found is volunteering gives a huge amount of connection and community. And in so many areas, especially in capital cities, there's so many different things that you can go and do volunteering wise. But we don't really speak about that as something that's beneficial for our health.
There's a researcher in America named Linda Fried that found that people who volunteer, especially older people, have lower healthcare costs and they have lower rates of cardiovascular disease and lower BMI. And volunteering is such a powerful longevity strategy because when you go do it, you're likely to find people who share your values. You're going to get out of your home. You're going to connect with other people you're likely to become friends with, and you're going to live your purpose. We know that people who have a strong sense of purpose live about 8 years longer than people who don't, just like loneliness. And volunteer gives an outlet for the purpose. Purpose doesn't do a hell of a lot of good if you sit on the couch with it. It only matters when you're out putting it to work.
Thanks so much for listening. To hear the full episode, there's a link in the description.